Welcome to Plant Spirit Awakening. Plant Spirit Awakening, awakening the planet through conscious exploration of shamanic plant medicines from around the world. My name is Alan, and I am very happy to be back here today on the second installment of Plant Spirit Awakening. Thank you for joining me. Namaste. So here we are again. And today we have a great program lined up. We have a very wonderful interview that I did with a man named Benjamin, who did an intensive retreat down in the Peruvian Amazon with using ayahuasca. And he's going to talk all about his own journey, how he got interested in ayahuasca after years of spiritual practice, when he really did not have an interest in or desire to do any kind of plant medicine or entheogen. And now he is very much into it, and he's going to talk to us all about that. Before we get to that, I just want to make a few announcements, a few remarks about things that I said in my last podcast, which I want to just talk a little bit more about. First of all, this podcast, Plant Spirit Awakening, is mainly to promote awareness of shamanism, plant spirit medicine, and on a deeper level to explore the nature of consciousness, what it means to be human and human evolution, and where we're going as a species. Personally, I feel that these plant teachers have much to tell us about ourselves and the nature of the cosmos, and that is really why I'm doing this, is because I have been so affected by my own exploration and experiences with plant medicines. So I want to mention something that might be helpful to some of you out there, which is books. I mentioned some books last time, but I want to mention 10 really good books that I think you'll find helpful. If you haven't seen these books yet or read these books yet, you might want to check them out. They're all on Amazon. Most of them are also in the bookstore. Some of them might even be in your local library. So here they are, 10 great books on this subject or related to this subject. So in no particular order, here they are, 10 highly recommended reads. Ralph Metzner's book, Ayahuasca. Daniel Pinchbeck, Breaking Open the Head. Stanislav Grof, When the Impossible Happens. Martin Ball's The Entheogenic Evolution. Terence McKenna, True Hallucinations. Ram Dass, Paths to God. Jeremy Narby, The Cosmic Serpent. James Orok, Tryptamine Palace. Benny Shannon, The Antipodes of the Mind. And Rick Strassman, DMT, The Spirit Molecule. All really great books on the subject. You would do well to check out any of those books and deeply consider what's being said there. Next, I'd like to just mention that I have also written some pieces on this subject for Reality Sandwich, and they're posted both on Reality Sandwich and Evolver. The first piece I did was called Psychedelics in Light of the Yoga Sutras, and I will post links to that on the podcast page so that you can go directly there. They're under the name Alawa, A-L-L-O-W-A-H, and I will post them so you can look at those. I'm coming from a deep, intensive immersion in the yoga tradition, and so I hope that I can bring that in more and more as we go along, because I think it's very valuable to look at these things in light of the yoga tradition. And I also want to mention that the shaman, the Peruvian shaman that we're going to be discussing in this interview, Don Diego, he's from Spain originally, and then he became a shaman, I believe, when he was in his late teens. And I think he's been doing it for about 15 years or so, and been doing ceremonies all around the world now. I have done a ceremony with him. I was very impressed. And the thing that interested me about Don Diego in particular is that he spends time each year in India studying with a teacher there. And apparently he's connected with the Shiva tradition. When in his ceremony, he did a number of Shiva chants, and I wanted to interview him or talk to him, but I didn't get a chance to, but maybe I will be able to talk to him next time I do a ceremony with him. I hope so. Just one announcement before we get started with the interview with Benjamin. I mentioned Bouncing Bear Botanicals both on the Facebook page and during the podcast, and their website is still up, but it says on the website, Bouncing Bear was illegally raided by the feds on February 4th. Help us fight back. Anyway, I would just recommend that you go to the Bouncing Bear Botanicals site and click on the part where it says Help Us Fight Back, and you'll read a very interesting report about what happened to Jonathan Sloan, the owner of Bouncing Bear Botanicals, and why the charges against him are not really accurate, to say the least. All the more reason, I feel, to promote awareness of these botanicals, these plant medicines. So on to the interview now with Benjamin. First, just a little bit about Benjamin that you might want to know. Benjamin has been a dedicated spiritual seeker for over 30 years, and he has enthusiastically immersed himself in shamanism and plant spirit medicine for over 3 years so far. Having personally experienced the profound benefits of this path, he is excited to share them with others on this podcast. And that's something that Benjamin asked me to read about him. He would like to maintain some anonymity, and I honor that. I feel that is a wise decision on his part, as we can see from what happened with Jonathan Sloan. These things are still not widely accepted by the mainstream, and there's certainly a lot of them are illegal still. So let us use caution, judgment, prudence in how we talk about these things and use them, etc. So without further ado, here is part one of the interview with Benjamin, speaking about ayahuasca and Don Diego and shamanism. And part two will be posted in just a few days or so. Thank you for listening, and I hope this helps you.
Hello.
Namaste, and I wanted to welcome you to the podcast, and we'll just get started, and I wanted to ask you to tell the listeners a little bit about yourself and your journey and how you came to try ayahuasca or even consider trying a psychedelic substance. Would you use the word psychedelic, or what term do you personally favor right now?
Yeah, I think the term psychedelic, while it may be somewhat descriptive, is a little misleading, because when people think of psychedelics, they always think of recreational drugs like LSD, and this is a completely different kind of thing. There's actually a technical word that's been coined to describe this type of journey, and the word is entheogenic, and that's spelled E-N-T-H-E-O-G-E-N-I-C. The key part of that being the word theo in there, which is, of course, the Latin root for God, like theology. And an entheogenic does put one in an altered state of consciousness, you can safely say that, but as opposed to a psychedelic experience where one may be seeing a lot of wild imagery or having intense experiences that may or may not actually be helpful to you. In an entheogenic journey, my perception, having done it quite a few times now, is that one is not hallucinating, as in one is seeing things that don't exist. One is opening one's vision to other realms of reality. So to me, if you think of a hallucination as something that you're seeing stuff that isn't really there, it's not that at all. It is, in fact, an opening of vision and experience to realms of consciousness that one perhaps cannot normally access.
Okay. I'm wondering, did you see the film Manifesting the Mind yet?
I have not. I've not heard about it.
Okay. I would recommend seeing that because it goes into some depth on that whole... I mean, it actually begins with the question of how do we name... You know, how do we call these substances? And with differing opinions from people like Alex Gray and Dennis McKenna and... Daniel Pinchbeck is in there, and a bunch of other people, and they all have slightly different perspective on things. Like, Dennis McKenna favors the term psychedelic, which the film is actually called Manifesting the Mind, and psychedelic is often translated as to mean mind manifesting or manifesting the mind. I don't... have a clear, and then let me just say also that Alex Gray favors the term entheogenic.
Okay.
Because he, like you, would say that, let's talk about what these substances can actually do in the highest sense, as opposed to, like you said, if we're just using it recreationally, yes, we may be seeing a lot of lights and colors and sounds, and it may be cool and groovy or whatever, but if your intention is towards knowing the divine or knowing God or knowing the cosmic truth of existence, then you may... That may be what you're in for, versus if you are just taking it maybe at a rock concert or with some friends, and you don't necessarily have a clear focus for your journey.
Right.
You haven't done a lot of preparation, and maybe. And I would also say that you could do this with LSD and mushrooms and other things as well. That's just my understanding. I could be wrong about that, but I would think that it's not just ayahuasca, but I hope we could discuss that too.
Yeah, now I have never had a full-blown LSD trip. I tried it a couple of times when I was a teenager, and it only had a very mild effect on me at that time.
Yeah.
But I have, in fact, I have spoken recently, I get into the whole entheogenic versus hallucinogenic discussion. And I've been corrected a couple of times by people who say they have had very profound and life-changing experiences of the divine using LSD.
Yeah.
So I would not in any way, you know, want to imply that LSD can't be a profound, you know, awakener as well. I can't speak personally to that because that hasn't happened to me.
Right. Okay, good. So I that was what was coming up for me when you were speaking, is I wanted to go a little deeper into, you know, is it just ayahuasca, which is DMT? It's not LSD, lysergic acid.
Right.
It's a little. It does different things. It's still a, you know, what has been, I guess, scientifically termed an hallucinogen.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently, there are similar experiences that one might have. But
can I elaborate on a point you just made? What you just said about ayahuasca is it's DMT, and you're probably aware of this, but I think that's a little too reductive. Ayahuasca, in my experience, is a living plant spirit. It's actually a lady. She is definitely a feminine being. And, you know, to say it's DMT reduces it to a chemical. And you are, there's no question there are chemical processes undergoing in your body. You have to do a very strict diet before taking it so that, you know, your body is primed to have the proper chemical processes go on. But it's an as above, so below thing. There are, if you only measure the physical things, then you're missing the point of the whole thing, which is that you are blending with a living, conscious being who, in my experience, is way more advanced than any human being I've ever met and is not only a profound diagnostician, but an amazingly rapid and powerful healer, too. So, you know, to me, you know, the term for this sort of work is plant spirit medicine, and, you know, the spirit part is very important because you are using, you know, you are ingesting something physical, but it's actually allowing you to have something spiritual happen. So I hope that's a clarification of that. Yeah.
And I thank you for correcting me. I, you know, if I seem to be too scientific or reductive about things, please let me know. I have also experienced ayahuasca, and I would not reduce it, you know, during the experience. Now, not having had the experience for a little bit now, it's always, you know, you come back to, somewhat back to your usual business as usual egoic consciousness. At least for myself, I have to say that that's true, while at the same time being radically altered by it.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's different. You know, I'd have to say that while you're having the experience and at least for a while afterwards, you really would never think of doing what I just did, which is just reducing it to a chemical. So, forgive me for that.
Oh, no, no apology needed.
Okay. So, anyway, I wanted you to tell us about yourself, your journey, let's say, and your path to get you to this point. Because, as you told me before, there was a long time when you did not really even consider that taking a entheogen, to use that term, or any kind of mind or consciousness altering substance, which is maybe the way you looked at it prior to now, you know, you wouldn't have even thought of that. And then what led you to this point where now you're going to Peru and you are very seriously engaging yourself in this exploration of plant spirit medicine with ayahuasca and with San Pedro. So go ahead.
Okay. Well, I should probably give just a really brief sketch of my spiritual evolution. I was raised by a father who did not believe in God. And so until about the age of 17, I was technically considering myself an agnostic. I couldn't logically rule out the existence of God, but I was sure there wasn't anything like that. So, you know, I was very well on my way to that kind of consciousness. And then in college, I was listening to the song Supper's Ready by Genesis and had a partial out-of-body experience. It's like I was kind of tilted, and yet my body was lying flat on the bed, and that happened a couple of times. I thought, well, how do I explain this? So I started reading up on astral projection, and within a few weeks I had found a place. This was in Oklahoma, central Oklahoma, Norman, where I grew up, and found a place called the Lotus Center in Oklahoma City, where there was a Oklahoma-born guru named Audley Allison, who had traveled the world learning about different religions and meditative paths, claimed to be enlightened himself, and had a very extensive series of meditation classes. I took these for almost 20 years. And at that point, like most people that age, you know, I had smoked a little pot in college and that sort of thing. But stopped when I took his, you know, started his courses, because he says, you can't do that and do this. He says, pot will, you know, cloud you over and dull you down. So for almost 20 years, I focused on not only running energy through the body, but leaving out through the top of the head and going to various levels of consciousness, working with various divine beings. In my opinion, less successfully than most of the others, because I couldn't get out of my body. And the inability to leave my body is going to come become one of the reasons where I got into plant spirit medicine, actually, because I really needed a kick to get out of it.
Just for a moment and ask, why do you think that was the case with you?
Couldn't get out of my body?
Yeah.
Well, I'm also a professional astrologer, and if you look at the elemental balance in my chart, it's mostly Earth. And of all the elements, earth, air, fire, water, earth is the one that wants to stay grounded. I could have, you know, my body was very sensitive. When other people were saying I went to this level of the consciousness, my body would change its sensation and I could feel things. But as far as actually fully leaving the body and being fully outside it and looking down at it from above and being in different places, that wasn't happening for me yet, despite years and years of effort for that. So a meditative path that didn't involve a plant spirit teacher was not doing that for me.
Right.
And so that's the best reason I can come up with why it was so hard for me to get out of the body.
Okay. I was asking that because I also had a similar sense for myself that I would need some sort of kick to go deeper because my meditation practice just was not happening on the level that I wanted it to happen on, or I thought it should happen on.
Yeah.
So.
Now, one cool thing about being an astrologer is you meet an eclectic variety of people, and I know a lot of people who can barely stay in their bodies. You know, there for them the challenge is getting the heck back into it. So, it really depends how your wiring is energetically.
Yeah.
But anyhow, I eventually left that path for reasons that probably are not relevant to this discussion, so I'll leave those for another time. But then, you know, at that point, the path had become extremely complicated. I was doing sometimes meditation techniques that involved 150 steps, multiple things in different levels of consciousness. It would take 2 hours just to get it all done. I thought, this is crazy. You know, getting to God shouldn't be this hard. So I went to the complete opposite polarity. I became a Buddhist, and I practiced Vipassana Buddhism, which is, at its heart, just sit and watch your breath. And that was such a relief to do something simple. And did that for 3 or 4 years. And while I was still calling myself a Buddhist, I then made a big move. I had lived all my life in central Oklahoma, and then I moved to Asheville, North Carolina, to be a singer-songwriter, leaving a very well-paying corporate job to follow my dream.
Mm-hmm.
And got here, and...
How many years ago was that?
I moved here in 2001, in the fall. So that was at the age of 41. Astrologically, that's the Uranus opposition, but that's, again, only relevant for those who know what I'm talking about. It's a big time of life shift, the midlife crisis point. So I got here and started making new friends and met one guy who was into shamanism and was kind of, you know, he'd showed me what's called a mesa. This is a path called the Pachacuti Mesa, which involves setting up a very simple configuration of minimum 5 objects on a little piece of cloth, and the technology behind that, which has been practiced in South America for millennia, or technologies very similar, you can activate spiritual energies using this very simple mesa and, you know, some very simple, you know, easy techniques as well. So I got exposed to that, and then he invited me to a ceremony. And this was not ayahuasca, this was San Pedro, which I had not heard of before because I was totally out of the loop on this kind of stuff. But I was in a very, you know, expand, explore possibilities. I trusted him. So I did the ceremony, and it was really scary because I, you know, there was at that point, you know, I had this really profound somatic fear of losing control. Can't lose control, right? I'm sorry I have to speak astrologically sometimes, but Capricorn is such a strong energy in my chart. I'm an Aquarius sun, but Capricorn's really strong, and Capricorn's all about keeping control.
Yeah.
And I somehow sensed that if I didn't get something that would kick my ass a little bit and break me free of this need to have the personality be so much in control of me, that my spiritual evolution wasn't going to get very far. You know, that for me, the spiritual path is releasing control to the divine and not keeping it for yourself.
Yeah.
So So I did my first experience with San Pedro, which, if your listeners are not familiar, is a cactus that grows in the highlands of Peru and probably other places too. In Peru, the people who live down in the jungle areas tend to work more with ayahuasca because it grows there, and the ones more in the highlands often work with San Pedro because that grows there. There's usually a plant spirit teacher appropriate to your environment. And the differences are pretty profound. If you've done either ayahuasca or San Pedro, the differences are profound. They really don't resemble each other much, except that they both put you in strong altered states of consciousness. And they both might once in a while make you throw up.
Did you throw up?
I'm sorry? Not consistently. I definitely have had some major vomiting with both San Pedro and ayahuasca, but you never know. In fact, the dieta I just did down in Peru with Don Diego, where we drank five times over the course of 12 days, I did not vomit even once during any of the ayahuasca ceremonies, which surprised me. I was expecting that I would.
Were you on a strong diet, would you say?
Oh, yeah. I'd been dieting for 2 weeks prior. But he also gave us a substance the first night of ceremony, which was not ayahuasca, but was a different plant, which was a purgative. And this was amazing. He had us sit down and each of us had two buckets in front of us. We were sitting in the ceremonial open air area. And we had a bucket filled with about 3 gallons of water and a smaller bucket for vomiting. And he gave us each a couple of little spoonfuls of this substance, which he said would clean out our stomachs. He kind of warned us what would be happening. And then for the next 2 or 3 hours, we dipped our cups in that big old bucket of water and drank and drank until finally the urge to vomit, and then we'd vomit it all out into the bucket, and then we'd start again.
Wow.
And it was amazing, as I commented to him afterwards. Well, that certainly got us past any inhibition we have had about vomiting in public, because everybody was doing it. But he also said that by doing this the first night, or the first evening, he said we would also vomit less probably during the ayahuasca ceremonies, and it was certainly true for me because I didn't vomit even once during all those. And I need to be clear, this was not painful. It was actually the easiest vomiting I've ever done, because when you're vomiting up water, it was mostly water and almost no stomach acid, so there was very little abrasion to the throat after the first, couple of passes. So, it wasn't as horrible as it sounds. It actually was kind of interesting to vomit that much over that period of time.
Could we go back just one step, which is, so when you got to Asheville, were you still practicing Vipassana for a while?
Yeah, that was still my primary path. In fact, there's a retreat center an hour from here called Southern Dharma Retreat Center, and I actually went to several of their 10-day silent retreats. When I get into something, I get into it. I dive right into the deep end, typically.
Well, I've heard some that I have never done a 10-day Vipassana retreat, but I've been told that after 10 days, by several people, that the effects can be very, very profound. I mean,
yeah,
just as profound as doing a plant medicine journey, if not more so. What would you say about that?
Well, that was not true for me. Probably the most similar experience I had was, I think I did a long Zen silent retreat, but this was this form of Zen. I don't know if it was Soto, I don't remember which one. We were all sitting facing into the room, and we all meditated with our eyes open. So while you were meditating, you were focusing inward, but peripherally you were visually seeing most of the other people in the room during the sittings. And just to give a little perspective, typically a long retreat like this, you alternate sitting with walking meditation. So you're sitting about half the time that you're in the building, the meditation hall, and about half the time you're walking and being very mindful of each step kind of thing. But toward the end of that retreat, I had a period of about 15 or 20 minutes where I felt as if I was one with everybody in that room. Energetically, it felt like we were all one being. And of course, anyone who's worked with ayahuasca to any degree knows that that's a very common experience. You, in ayahuasca, you feel unified with everyone in the room, and it's like, in some way that's hard to understand until you've done it, you're all the same person. You have a true conscious experience of unity. This was really, in one of the ceremonies I did, I call it my Breakthrough Sunday, where I spent 9 hours in a state of just total and complete bliss. It was, imagine a 9-hour orgasm that just never stops. And
was this in Peru just now, recently?
You'll need to cut that question, because this actually happened in the United States.
Okay.
So let's go back and stop you asking about where it was.
Yeah. Okay. Give me a second here.
All right.
Okay, I'll just stop it right there.
Okay, good.
So you can continue in a second.
Okay.
From that point on. Okay, ready?
Uh-huh.
Here we go.
And was just the most ecstatic experience I ever had, but this is just to mention, during that ceremony, which was like the only one I've had that was like just 100% pure bliss, there were a few times, 6 or 7, when I felt the beginnings of nausea happening within me. And every single time that I felt any kind of nausea beginning in me, at that moment, someone else in the room would vomit. And it truly felt as if the others in the room were vomiting on my behalf and purging for me. And that was an amazing experience. It's like Spirit wanted to give me just a total vacation experience. And but an extraordinary thing happened during that ceremony. It's like Spirit wanted to give me such a vacation experience that during the several times, 6 or 7, that I began to feel the beginnings of nausea in me, which is usually the signal that you're going to be vomiting soon, someone else in the room at that very moment would vomit. And, you know, once or twice you could pass off as coincidence, but it happened consistently 6 or 7 times. And it became clear to me that others in the room were purging on my behalf, which blew my mind. I hadn't expected that to happen. In a similar way, there were a couple of girls in the ceremony who occasionally would start giggling. This happened 2 or 3 times. I would feel it in me, and I would do sort of a focused release of energy, like with the breath, kind of like a couple of times, and their giggling immediately would die down. So I was, in a sense, releasing that nervous energy for them. And that's kind of how these ceremonies can go. You're so energetically intertwined with these people that, you know, you can help each other out. I remember a San Pedro ceremony I did a while back where I did the most extreme purging I've ever done in a ceremony. I mean, just intense, almost painful vomiting for over an hour. I was so weak, I literally could not lift my face out of the bucket. And I was releasing something really intense, and the shaman at the end of that ceremony said, you know, you weren't purging just for yourself. You were purging for others too. And he says, that happens in this work sometimes. Sometimes you do your own work and sometimes you help other people out. And it's hard to know sometimes which is happening. So, you know, at that dieta where I never vomited once, I was willing. In fact, I invited ayahuasca. I says, if there's someone who needs to be vomited for, if I can help somehow, I'll be happy to do it. But I never did. I think I've done this enough now. You can purge energetically without it having to be physical. And I'm getting better at releasing the stuff that's coming up by like exhaling and just kind of focusing on energetic release. And what I'm finding is that the better you get at that, sometimes the less essential it becomes to actually purge physically. Now, I fully expect that in my future work, I'll probably be doing some physical purging too. And I'm more than happy to do that. With this kind of work, I am really unconditionally accepting whatever comes along. And that actually, I wanted to address another thing you said earlier that I made a quick note on. You says, the purpose of doing plant spirit work is to know the divine. And ultimately, that's true. But in effect, when you do plant spirit work, part of what you're doing is you're doing a hell of a lot of cleanup.
Yeah.
And that is part of the process. I mean, when I had my breakthrough Sunday, as I describe it, and I had this period of bliss, that was after doing something like 15 plant spirit ceremonies, which are certainly had a lot of bliss in them, but some of them were just really tough. I mean, you are facing some incredibly dark stuff sometimes in yourself, and it's being brought up to be released, so it's not like you're being punished. It's like you just have to be willing to do what I, as an astrologer, call Pluto work. You know, you've got to go all the way down into the depths and be willing to face whatever muck and mire is down there, because plant spirit teachers like ayahuasca and San Pedro, they will not cut you any slack. If there's some deep, nasty thing in you you need to face and it's time to face it, you're going to face it. And you may, you know, after an hour say, okay, I get it, I'm done. But if the plant spirit teacher doesn't feel like you got it, you might be working with that thing several more hours or the whole night. So that's... Go ahead.
Excuse me, one little point, which is that sometimes people will say, and even Don Diego said this in a ceremony, that this is the quick way.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also, even though, and some people would call it cheating in a sense, but it's not really, because even though it's quick, it's also very intense.
Yes.
And so, you know, you really have to be prepared and not think that, oh, you're just going to have, you know, you're just going to take this and you're going to go into a blissful state of consciousness and see lots of nice colors and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Really like that.
Yeah, and that's why I think there's really no risk of things like ayahuasca or San Pedro ever becoming recreational drugs. Because a lot of times they are not fun at all. It's hard work.
Yeah.
And once you sign up, you're, you know, with San Pedro, you know, you can count for the next 8 or 9 hours you're going to be working with this. And often it's about that long with ayahuasca, too. I think ayahuasca tends to be slightly shorter in its effect, but it can seem like a really long time. But, you know, what I find, you know, it's probably worth speaking about the character of the kind of people I encounter on this path. You know, when people think hallucinogens, you get this image of, you know, scuzzed out, greasy-haired, you know, druggies who are just looking for their next fix. But, in fact, when the people I've met doing plant spirit work are people of the highest vibration, very intelligent, educated, responsible people, holding down, most of them very well-established in their communities, you know, respectable people who are just really powerfully devoted to their spiritual work. And they're finding, as I have, that it's plant spirit work, so far in my experience, is the most potent spiritual accelerator I've ever encountered. You know, you can work through stuff in one night with one of these plant spirit teachers that might take you years of more traditional therapy or other meditation to deal with, and that's assuming you got to break through it at all. I mean, I personally think we are on a deadline right now, because I believe that, and I see all around me the evidence that we're now moving into the 2012 shift, where, you know, humanity is accelerating, and I think we're going to hit some kind of, you know, singularity around the December solstice of 2012, where there's a big shift going to happen. Now, it's a process and not just a one-time event. But, you know, what the plant spirit teachers like ayahuasca or San Pedro or the others I haven't worked with, like peyote or iboga or the others, they are tremendous accelerators. They say, okay, we've got a big event coming, and, you know, the years of quiet sitting meditation might get you there for some people, but, you know, ayahuasca, in my experience, is faster. In fact, on my Breakthrough Sunday experience, you know, she talks to you. You know, I've had, you know, conversations with her on the inner plane as she works with me. And in one of the visions she showed me was of a big mountain and all these, you know, spiraling paths leading up to the top. And she showed me that they represented all the spiritual paths of the world. And she said, they all get there. And then with a little wink in her voice, she said, but I'm faster. She's got a sense of humor, too. And that's my experience. She's just fast. Now, at the same time, I will quote Don Diego, who likes to say, ayahuasca is for everybody, but not everybody is for ayahuasca. And what he means by that somewhat cryptic statement is, you know, it's not the right path for everybody. You know, some people are going to be medically excluded, because one of the things you have to do if you're taking it is you have to get off all your meds. And if you're, like, you know, needing to take an antidepressant, that will automatically exclude you from working with ayahuasca, because you can't get the right chemistry in your stomach to absorb it if you've got an antidepressant working in there. And there may be other reasons why it's not a good idea for you.
You might need to do some remedial work to even get to the point where you could take ayahuasca, because your body is not going to be able to handle it.
That's possible. And, you know, if you have any question about that, you know, you should, you know, when I sign up for the dieta in Peru, you know, there's a very extensive questionnaire that asks for a lot of medical history and psychological history and the whole thing. So, you know, you do need to be cautious, because it's an extremely potent teacher. And, you know, some people... You know, I know of at least one person who had a really bad experience with it. You know, it was very upsetting. So, you know, it's powerful medicine, quite literally. So for most people, it's extraordinary, and they may, you know, go through, and it's amazing to see the people, you know, who will go through this really intense, sometimes, you know, feels like life and death struggle kind of stuff in their ceremony, and, you know, be just, you know, going through the pits of a challenge for hours and hours, and then the next morning, you know, we're all, you know, have sharing our experiences. I say, man, I just had the most challenging experience of my life, and I can't wait to do it again. I feel how much I've released. It's like...
Well, I want to make one little point that was made by... I'm reading this book called The Psychotropic Mind, just published by Inner Traditions. It's a trilogue between Jeremy Narby, Vincent Ravalek, and Jan Kaunen.
Uh-huh.
And one point they make is that there always seems to be a happy ending, even when the experience is traumatic.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go through dark portions of the journey, you'll come out of it feeling, if not reborn, but then very very much like you've gone through a healing or some kind of transformation. Would you say that is accurate, or would you say that sometimes people are traumatized for a while by it?
Well, my own experience is that that's true. At the dieta I recently attended in Peru, it was in December of 2009, there were five ceremonies where we drank ayahuasca, and in the second and fourth, I faced some really dark, really scary stuff. And it was very, very hard work in those ceremonies. And yet by the time it was all done, I had cleared so much stuff out of me that I didn't even know was there. And felt so much more light and clear and powerful. It was like, whoa, how'd that happen? So I totally agree. Now, there was one lady at our dieta who actually had to leave because she had, you know, multiple personalities pop out during the second ceremony. And it was very disruptive, not only for her, but for everyone else, because she couldn't control them, and they were shouting out all kinds of things during the ceremonies, which obviously is somewhat disruptive.
Could you describe a little bit of what was happening, or would you rather not? It's up to you.
This is her personal. I'm certainly not going to name her, but
no.
It's probably an extreme example of how, you know, some people are not quite ready for this plant spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, so she, it was in the best. I think she and Don Diego agreed the next day that it was probably better for her to leave and
okay.
not continue the dieta. You know, but you know, she was fine the next day. You know, she was, you know, it was like a bout of, it was like my sense is that ayahuasca showed her the stuff that was already in her, and it came out very dramatically in a way that showed her, okay, this is what I really need to deal with. So she probably got a powerful lesson from that, you know, but, and I don't know what modalities are going to be best for her to work with that, but that's just, again, an example of people who maybe are not yet ready for this kind of medicine, if they're not quite psychologically steady enough for this kind of work.
Could I ask you, what is your feeling about when you go through a very troubling, dark portion of a journey, like you did, you said, on your second and fourth
mm-hmm.
session, what was causing that, would you say? What was bringing that up at that particular time? And you don't have to go into very much detail, but if you could just say in a general sense, what do you think was bringing that up at those times?
Well, it was dark stuff, and it was time to release. During the second ceremony, what I discovered was that I had been infiltrated by a sorceress. You know, there's a group here in Asheville that claims to be doing, you know, shamanic journeying, and in fact, there are dark spirits in that room, and they tend to infiltrate those who are in the ceremonies, and they don't even know what's happening. I did not know what was happening to me. I felt a slightly unsettling vibe, and if I'd been smarter, I would never have come back, but I was also somewhat mesmerized, I think, and kind of sucked back in by what they were doing. And so the whole second ceremony, first ayahuasca showed me a vision of the room and where the entities had been in that room. And then we spent the whole rest of the ceremony cleaning entities out of me. It was amazing. so So that ceremony was about, okay, you need to get rid of this stuff because obviously you're not clean and clear enough with these entities hanging around you and doing whatever nastiness they're doing. And then the fourth ceremony, which was even more intense, was I just hit a wall of blackness. I mean, all the other ceremonies, when things were being cleaned out of me, they always came in the form of, like, insects. It was like, you know, a wave of beetles or, you know, insects scurrying out of you, and thank God those are gone, or a spider or something, you know, kind of something is generally perceived as icky.
Yeah.
But in this ceremony, it was like just a wall of black, and it was totally... It was, in a sense, like the monolith in 2001. There's just this blackness, and where the hell's the other side of it kind of thing.
And I spent
the entire ceremony, I was so exhausted. After about 2 hours, I had no energy left. And I actually was passing out over and over again during the ceremony because the work was so intense. I couldn't even stay conscious. But fortunately, Don Diego came over several times to assist me, and one of his assistants actually at one point took me out and started dumping buckets of water over my head, you know, just to, you know, wash away this stuff. And he said, you need a bath. So I got a bath.
I've got two questions about that.
All right.
Question is, is there a somatic basis for this? That's the first question. Is the ayahuasca coming into contact with maybe some organ of your body or some maybe place in your body that is perhaps needing some kind of work done? And is that what's causing that kind of visionary experience in your view? And then the other question would be, let's just go with that question first, and then I'll ask the second question.
Okay. Well, I'm going to answer it the best I can, and let me know if I'm off track with my answer. You know, chemically, ayahuasca is absorbed through the stomach. You know, it's technically, it's actually a mixture of ayahuasca vine and chacruna leaf. That's the basic recipe, although different shamans throw different other things in there. Don Diego says he just uses those two ingredients in his ayahuasca. And the actual DMT is contained in the chacruna leaf. But the problem, if you just eat chacruna leaf, you know, the stomach has acids that as soon as, you know, DMT hits the stomach, it's immediately neutralized. The ayahuasca vine part acts, I believe, as an MAO inhibitor, which actually stops the chemicals in the stomach from neutralizing the DMT so that it can be orally ingested. So I think the technical answer to your question is that the ayahuasca is always absorbed through the stomach. Now, that's the physical thing going on. I remember an ayahuasca experience I did also in the jungles of Peru in 2007, a whole different shaman and everything. And I spent the whole night trying to vomit. You know, the urge was there, but it just wouldn't come up till the very end of the night. And it felt like, I keep being shown inside my body ayahuasca opening up channel after channel, because there was some toxin in there she needed to get to, and she wasn't going to let me vomit till she got to it. And my sense is all these little inner doorways and channels being opened one after until we finally got to the stuff she wanted, and then I was allowed to vomit and expel it. Now, I don't know if physically she opened doorways for it to physically come out, or if there's more of an energetic opening, but I know that when I saw that ick, and, you know, you're allowed to, when I do ayahuasca, I can see within myself, within my own body, when it's appropriate. And I saw that stuff, and it was so nasty and dark and nasty. And finally, I was able to vomit it out, and it was such a blessed relief to be free of that darkness, whatever it was and whatever it represented, whether it was physical, emotional, or mental, or spiritual, or maybe all of the above.
Now, so, before you purged that, you were having a dark patch of stuff happening, and then when that cleared, did that clear the visionary, the dark visions or whatever you were?
Well, there were no dark visions. It was just uncomfortable. You know, it's not comfortable to feel like you have to vomit over and over and doing a lot of dry heaving and nothing happening. You know, that's kind of frustrating.
let me just break in for a second and just say, I've had that experience too of needing to vomit, of the ayahuasca, like, trying to get me to vomit.
Mm-hmm.
And actually the first thing that happened was it came out the other way. So, you know, it was diarrhea first.
Right.
And then, and then I needed to vomit, but I was not able to vomit for the longest time. Mm-hmm. Finally, and I also feel that my vomiting during this ceremony was partly due to the fact that a friend was needing to purge, and I think I was kind of, like you were saying before, either I was doing it with her for whatever reason, mm-hmm. maybe on her behalf, or maybe just I was it was infectious a little bit. I was just catching it, mm-hmm. and it was, you know, I don't know if that's the answer, but in any case, I was not able to do it for the longest time, even though I felt that it was definitely coming up, and then finally there was that breakthrough of just it all came gushing out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and she won't let you purge till you're ready. I mean, she has work she's doing to make sure that when you purge, you're actually releasing the stuff that needs to be released. And if you do it prematurely, then the work isn't getting done. Mm-hmm. That's how I think about it.
Some people say that when they purge, the experience gets deeper or richer. What would you say about that?
Not necessarily.
Yeah.
I have had the experience during some ceremonies, not with, not so much with Don Diego, but with another shaman, where, you know, the experience would get incredibly, overwhelmingly intense when I needed to purge.
Okay.
And this was during a ceremony when I purged several times during the night. And what I gained knowledge of then is when you're feeling like, I can't handle this, it's too strong, it's overwhelming me. That's a signal that you need to purge, and she's bringing up the stuff that needs releasing. So that's the best answer I can give. I have not found, other than that, a direct correlation. Like, it's as if it's going to get better after you purge. That's not necessarily true. I haven't found a direct cause and effect with that in other ceremonies.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so either. I would think that it would just really be dependent on the person and on the session and the moment, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And I don't think you can make any kind of blanket statement about what's going to happen to anyone.
No, I've never, I've done plant spirit work about 25 times, and it's never been the same experience twice. I mean, there are certain common elements, but the specifics of each ceremony are always different.
Now, do you think, my other question from before was, do you think that you might have some kind of, you know, what you might term like a negative or a dark experience, even though it never really is. It's all just, you know, purification happening.
Mm-hmm.
But would you have that on someone else's behalf, do you think, ever?
Well, I immediately flash back to that extended vomiting I did during one of my San Pedro sessions, and that may have been the case there. Now, I want to throw something in here that might just be me, but except for my first plant spirit work, when I did my first San Pedro, when I was probably more scared than I've ever been in my life, just, you know, that's when I found out I had to drink Singa, of course. For those who don't know, it's a very potent tobacco and alcohol mixture that you actually drink through your nose. And when I found I was already in the ceremony, they hadn't been told about that. When I was told I would have to drink tobacco through my nose, I really got scared. And there was also this general somatic terror, I guess, that, oh, my God, I'm going to lose control.
Yeah.
And but that was only the first time. In fact, it was interesting. I'll tell you how resistant I was to releasing control. Again, I only worked with San Pedro the first 7 or 8 times I worked with plant spirit medicine because I found a shaman I really liked. And the first several times I did it, she literally had to knock me unconscious to blend with me. I mean, the effects would begin. I'd feel this sort of nausea come over me. I wouldn't vomit, but it was like, oh, God, here it comes. And I'd freak out, and I would faint. And I was told that I was usually unconscious for about 15 minutes, and then I would come around. And then by then, she would have blended with me. And that happened probably 3 times before I finally somatically released enough that I could let her blend with me and not, you know, be overwhelmed by it. And it was a gradual process of becoming acclimatized to it. So I may have got off on a tangent there, but does that answer
your
question?
No, thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
go to what you're reflecting on your most recent experience in Peru.
Mm-hmm.
You could share anything, any insights that came from that our audience here would maybe benefit from hearing.
Hmm. Well, the insight for me would be that if you're willing to do this intense work, there are just rich and bountiful rewards. My experience during the ceremonies was that I released a tremendous amount of darkness. For example, let me at least put a cap on that story about facing that wall of darkness during that fourth ceremony and getting the water dumped over my head and keep passing out back and forth and all that. I was never scared. I mean, it was one of the most intense experiences of my life, but I had complete faith. I had worked with ayahuasca enough to trust her completely. I literally trust her with my life. And I say the same for Don Diego. I mean, we were in this, his Sacsayhuacay preserve in Peru. We were an hour away from any civilization by boat, and there was no leaving, you know.
Right.
So I also very happily was trusting him with my life as well.
From the moment you met him, or did it take a while for that trust to build?
No, it was very quick. When I first met him and I looked into his eyes, they are the deepest eyes I've ever gazed into. They are infinitely deep, and what radiates from them is love. I mean, I could not believe the amount of love radiating from the man. And having had many hours of interaction with him now, whether in ceremony or talking with him, or whatever. Here, it's a man. He's a man who's really surrendered his ego to service, and he is. You know, there are like you mentioned earlier. There's good shamans and bad shamans, right? And many of them will happily do things that will abuse or take advantage of other people. But Don Diego, in my experience, is not like that. He appears to be working only the high side. He's only working good energies. He's only out to assist and help people. And I've never seen him take advantage of anyone or even heard anyone talk about him taking advantage of anybody. He really appears to me to be very as high a vibration. Excuse me, as high a vibration as I can imagine.
The group that I was with all felt that from him as well.
Yeah, in fact, one of the things that I heard some of his the people who are really impressed with him, I was about to say devotee, but that's not correct. He's not a guru. This is a whole different kind of trip. I know some who will not drink ayahuasca with anybody else. And when you have done ayahuasca and you know how profound the benefits are, that's quite a statement to say that you will restrict your experience of this amazing plant spirit teacher to only one shaman. And I've never heard anyone say that about any other shaman. There may well be others who have the same attitude. I've just never heard it spoken in the, you know, at any other ceremonies by any other followers.
So there is part one of Benjamin and my discussion of ayahuasca and Don Diego. Stay tuned for part two, which will be posted very shortly, maybe in just a day or so. If you enjoyed the podcast, please tell a friend about it. And I'll just leave you today with a little bit more original music. Hopefully you'll find it nice and relaxing. Thanks for listening.